The last thing, we didn't have three victories here lately in Islam. And all three of them came from the most unexpected places. You know, the hadith say that there come a time when the gharibun, the strangers, y'all probably don't remember that hadith, that these strangers would have a special love for Allah and His Messenger. The gharibun, they call, you know, it also means west. I hope it means us here in the west, that we will have a special love. But I just want to mention in closing, in the last 25 years, the first break for the Muslim during this process of Islamic revival happened in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Now, that's another criteria for not being on the circuit, that you cannot and you must not have anything good to say about Iran. That's right? But that revolution happened in the most westernized country in the world. The most westernized country in the world was Iran, and they had a revolution there. Why? Because the odds they were against, the organization of the government was so powerful and so strong, they had to love death more than they loved life because of what they had to deal with. They had to have a special love for martyrdom, a special taste for martyrdom. That martyrdom have to be a part of their breathing, their rituals, and everything else like that. And the ones who had that ritual more than anybody was the Shia community. And therefore, that happened. This Islamic revival that we're going through right now happened first in an area where people would be able to stand the pressure of the worldwide onslaught against their struggle. And they survived. The next one was Lebanon, the playland of the Middle East. Go back 25, 30 years ago. When you wanted to party in Saudi Arabia, you couldn't do it. You took a flight, a short hop to Lebanon. And in Lebanon, there was drugs, there was prostitution, and there was everything that you might need or desire right in Lebanon. But from Iran going through Syria, the pastoran was allowed to go through Syria to go to face the Zionists in the early 80s in Lebanon. During the first year, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards fought directly the Zionists. But then in the process, they trained the Hezbollah. And because the Hezbollah had a strong love for the next life, right? They was like in the book where it says they sold or they exchanged the life of this world for the next world. So they were different than all the other Arab armies. Before, the PLO and others were just like bank robbers or something like that. No, they planned to go in, hit the Israelis, and they had an escape plan. Normal, right? The Hezbollah, they up to today, they never have an escape plan. When they hit the Yahud, we go in to hit them, and we go in that escape. And they do not develop an escape plan. The willingness to die in the cause of Allah, make a long story short, broke the back of the Zionists. Different than the PLO and others. Until 2 years ago, the Zionists picked up, packed up, and left Lebanon with no treaty or nothing. Isn't that right? Why? Because the people ran them out. So the second one was Lebanon, a direct transfer. And now you look at Palestine and other places, a direct transfer from the Hezbollah to the Palestinian movement. And now the Palestinian movement is dressed in martyrdom, isn't that right? And now they got the Zionists jumping up and down, hollering and screaming, isn't that right? Why? Because something has been transferred. And that's the way an Islamic revolution or revival, it starts in a strange place, but pretty soon it catches on to everybody else. And the last place, definitely the most unlikely. Now you have to pay attention to what these European media say. They say the constitution of Iraq can be the source of it will be Islam, but it won't be the only source. Now you listen to these people, you think that somebody sold out and gave up something, right? It's not true. They were forced, the U.S. was forced into the position that the source of our constitution, whether we vote or anything, has to be Islam. Has to be Islam. Okay? So that's it. So if we got 70 or 80%, that's fine. First we was thinking 60% would be fine, but the way it sounds more like 80%. Soon as you get rid of old Sam, you can do what you want. Isn't that right? This is what's happening today. When you see a bombing, and I'm definitely closing, in these places, right at the time of Ziyarah, when they do Ziyarah, is because these idiots want to start fighting between the Muslim groups again. But thanks to Allah, the Muslims of Iraq know better. That's why you haven't seen no fighting, isn't that right? And they're constantly, the U.S. is constantly fanning the flames, pretending like they are a peacemaker, fanning the flames, trying to start the Muslims to fight against each other. The reason we're talking about Ahlul Bayt here today is so that in the near future, when some idiot that don't know nothing about Islam come and tell you to have some like for this side or hatred for the other side, you got to watch out. Because the way they gain their progress is when we fight and argue with each other. All of us should love the household of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And if you don't believe me, just go get Sahih Bukhari, Sahih Muslim, Abu Dawood, and Tirmidhi. Now the last thing, the people in Quetta, in Pakistan. Now, Pakistan is a little more emotional. A little more emotional. The Lebanese and the Iranians have a specific guidance. Like from Imam Khomeini in the early days, he had a book called Fatawa for Wahda, Fatwas for Unity. And he told the people, do not do anything in rituals that is considered mustahab that may be offensive to the majority. When they went to Hajj in 1980s, the Shia from Iran began to pray behind the majority. All of the things that used to go on in Iran, they used to beat effigies of Umar every Muharram. He outlawed that. And now you don't find it at all in Iran. And you don't find it hardly at all in Lebanon. But in Pakistan, it's a little more emotional. So it's easier to start fitna because the fitna had been so heavy. You got Indian agents blowing up buildings and blaming it on other Muslims, the main buildings of the masajid. You have people, Ali Hadith people, who really, when they think of Shias, they think their blood is halal, to kill them and to slaughter them. So if you see a bombing, like they try to blame a bombing, some radical Shias exploded a bomb in Najaf, exploded a bomb in Karbala, impossible. No Shia could do that because these are the holiest places for all of them. So they couldn't do that. They could blow up down the street or in another town, but it's impossible, right? That Karbala or Najaf, anything is done that desecrates or degenerates the sanctity of that place. So right now, this third victory in Iraq, the Westerners are trying to steal it. How? By starting fitna amongst the Muslims. And that's why we read these hadith today on the household of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. we should all love the household of the prophet. Everyone that have a collection of hadith, go three or four in whatever section, whatever hadith you have, and you will find it there yourself. Brothers and sisters, we're on a threshold of victory after victory. I mean, everything is going our way. And for my sixth and final closing, you can see it clearly. Think about it. This dumb George Bush. This man, you know the way Pharaoh went overboard, and we talked about Tagut. George Bush and his clique just go overboard. The whole world is saying you don't have no weapons of mass destruction. I mean, white people are saying you got by as a bunch of liars. We don't believe you. Okay, then they get busted spying on the UN. Kofi Annan, the biggest stooge they ever had, and then they're going to spy on him. And then they get caught. Then, while everybody's right in the middle of distrusting everything they say, they do early 19th century, old time, what? Kidnapping. Gunboat diplomacy. This goes back to 1903, the Panama Canal. Old time, this is gunboat diplomacy to the max. None of us was there to see it in 1903. But look, we are alive. This is what it is. And then you go kidnap a man who's a duly elected president, right? And take him to Central Africa. Way 6,000 miles. Don't even let him know where he's going. And then say, we ain't kidnapped nobody. And then the man come out and say, you did. You kidnapped me. You did this. The servant say, yeah, the man was didn't want to go. So if I go grab some white folks, right, and take them over to Virginia and hold them for 8 hours, the police come and grab me, I say, I ain't kidnapped nobody, right? And the white folks say, he kidnapped me. What you think they're going to do? Straight over to the jailhouse. Isn't that right? That's the way. It's beautiful that we have people so stupid that do stuff like that. That's why that ship, the American ship, is going down. And it's clowns like that that's driving it down. We don't have to do nothing. Just step back, pray fast, do good deeds, and stuff like that, and let that guy go. He's going to drive himself and old Uncle Sam with his top hat and stars and stripes into the dustbin of history. Yeah, he is the greatest thing we ever had. For a revolution, right? When he finishes, nobody will love, nobody will trust, and nobody will believe anything coming from the United States of America because of our dear George W. George Waheed, or the Unified Bush. Have we unified all the Muslims? No, I don't care how dumb, how slow, how fast we are. All the Muslims know now, right? We in this together. What don't the newspapers say? The Wahhabis did this. The Wahhabis used to be nice guys. Last year and on back, isn't that right? It was the mean old Shiites. They was the bad guys, right? Now, all the Shiites is kind of all right. And it's those bad old Wahhabis. Anybody's dumb enough to go for any of that need a Muslim psychiatrist to unravel the mumbo jumbo that they have in their mind and their heart. Oh Allah, we seek thy refuge from anxiety and grief. We seek thy refuge from lack of strength and laziness. We seek thy refuge.